What's this? All right, please join me in singing. If you don't know, come and go with, come, whoever you are. It's number 188 in the hymnal. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving. Ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yet again come.
Good morning. I hope you're all doing well this morning. I'll confess I'm still a little scrambled myself. Modern technology, I updated the operating system in my phone, and it broke my alarm. So I still am not quite settled into the day yet, but I'm looking forward to doing with it with all of you. Whoever you are, whomever you love, you are welcome here. Whether you're a believer of myths or a myth buster, a prophet, or a skeptic, a Pollyanna, or one who thinks the end days are upon us, you are welcome here. Before we begin, I'd like you to take a moment, please, to welcome each other. Say hello. Introduce yourself if you don't know who's sitting next to you. And good morning to all of you once again. For our services, we've been loosely following the UUA's Soul Matters themes of the month. And this month's theme is prophecy, which is not your typical UU theme, perhaps, or concept. For those of you still new to Unitarian Universalism, I have to say that while it's true that there's no UU creed and no official doctrine, Unitarian Universalism is not generally a tradition that trucks a lot in divine revelation. And the idea that divine revelation might foretell some future happenings sort of seems to conflict with some humanist ideas about self-determination and the sort. So we don't talk a lot about prophecy. But nevertheless, it may or may not surprise you to learn that a lot of UUs can wrestle meaning out of, like, anything. And this is one where there's a lot of meaning for UUs who reflect on the history of prophets, the role they play, and what they do to help shape the world, especially in these times. It's a good idea to be thinking about prophecy and prophetic witness. Before we begin fully here, I draw your attention to the announcements and the order of service, and I particularly want to draw your attention to this insert here. Christopher Renner, after the service, will be out back signing people up for this who want to go, so see him if you have any questions about that. All right, again, if you know Unitarian Universalist traditions, you'll know that while it's true that while we don't have a creed everybody must accept, we do affirm a set of principles that say something about how we should interact with ourselves and the world, and we cite some sources of wisdom in our living tradition and our changing tradition that we hold in common. The second source is relevant to this month's theme. So I'll read this as our chalice is lit by Noah Meyer, who should be coming up now. Good morning, everyone. How are you? Our living tradition of wisdom and spirituality is drawn from sources as diverse as science, poetry, scripture, and personal experience. The second source, noted, as you will see these, the sources are not on here, the principles are. The second source is words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Our first hymn this morning will be hymn number 1018. That will be in your blue, the teal hymnal. 1018, Come and Go With Me. Please stand in body or spirit, sing 118, 1018. One of our traditions that's shared with many UU fellowships is that we join together in community to express our joys and our sorrows so that we may know each other, that we may share in each other's joys, and that we may comfort each other in sorrow. So if you have a personal joy or sorrow you'd like to share with the fellowship, please raise your hand and the mic will be around.
Good morning, Christopher Renner. And apparently, according to the Mercury, I'm part of the Hollywood elite this morning. Longtime UUFM member Sam Lacey has had a very rough week. Sam is 97 years old. He's been living by himself here until fairly recently. A couple weeks ago, I started spending nights with him. But on Monday, I had to have him hospitalized with congestive heart failure and fluid on his lungs. Friday, he was transferred to Via Christi Village to the rehab unit. And so if any of you are over that way and want to drop in and visit, I think Sam would appreciate it. It's been sort of a lonely week. There's been myself and Dean Denner and Bill Dorsett have been by, and Ann Cowan got by for a little while yesterday. And so it was sort of a lonely week in the hospital. Most of his family are spread to the far ends of this continent, and so he doesn't have local family. So if you're around and can stop by even for 15 minutes, that would be great. Thanks.
Mr. Brandon Boker, I'm just happy today because starting Wednesday, I start cello lessons. Yay! Uh-huh. It's going to be good today.
Well, I'm very joyful about the the development of the Kansas People's Agenda that is holding this rally, organizing a rally, hopefully with 1,000 people from all over Kansas at the state capitol on Wednesday. And we have a bus organized to take people there, which will be leaving at the J.C. Penney parking lot area. And we have maybe 20 people signed up, and we need another 30 for that bus. So hope you can do it. This is a really promising development. Sylvia Beeman and Sabrina Bowker and I attended both of the planning sessions for this event, and we were very impressed with the youth of the leadership of this. No longer are old fogies, you know, leading the charge. And so we're very hopeful that this could really amount to a beginning of a grassroots political movement in Kansas that shares our values. Thank you.
Jim Chanteau. Jim Mitchell, a longtime member of this fellowship going back for years and years, died about a week ago. His service will be here on the 28th at 2 o'clock. So any of you who knew Jim or would like to come honor his memory are certainly invited to attend.
Dick Beeman. Sylvia and I are thrilled to have two of our daughters here today, Irene and our grandson, Sofyan. That's the chirping you will hear later in the program will likely be Sofyan and Naomi.
I am proud of two of our youth members, Kaya Vanella and Jake Larson, who both advanced a belt level in Taekwondo just before the holidays. And Jake also turned 9 on December 28th.
I think we have... Oh, over here.
Emil Forrester. We lost a member of our K-State community, our Manhattan community at Manhattan Meadowlark yesterday. Lauren Alexander, some of you may know him. Wonderful guy, beautiful voice. Will be missed.
My joy is that I turned 10 on January 1st.
And we have one more.
I want to invite Eric Richardson up here with me. I have been asked to present to him this award. He has been working on earning the Religion and Me honor through Cub Scouting and the UUA. So it's a Religion and Me award on Unitarian Universalism, and he's done some things like the poster out there with the hands and that and the words, and he's done a number of other activities learning about Unitarian Universalism. And so I get to present to him this award and pen for the good work that he has done with this.
I'm going to, for all those joys and concerns spoken, and for those not, our hearts are with you. I'm going to change up the order of the service right now spontaneously and jump right into the children's story. So if the children want to come on up, please do. I'll see you in a minute. Morning, y'all. How you doing? There's a good crowd up here. I got a question for you. Prophecy. What's prophecy?
Prophecy is something that was predicted that will happen.
Something that was predicted and will happen. Anybody have another definition they want to give me?
Something that was predicted to happen in mythicality.
Predicted to happen, but then added mythicality, right? So it's a mythic thing. Can anybody give me examples of some prophecies? Oh, we had another definition, but let's just go into some examples of prophecies you know about from myth or from fiction or from real life.
Probably like in Greek mythology, the oracle would say the ships would leave the port for the last time. It would always be correct.
Okay. The oracle was always right. Anybody else, another example?
The one from the Lego movie.
The Lego movie.
The Oracle of Delphi. You could go to Delphi in Greek times and give an expensive offering, and then the oracle would answer your question in a riddle.
And it's always correct.
Like if a king was about to go to war, let's say, and he asked the oracle, how will the war go? She says that she foresees ships leaving the port the last time. And that can mean so many things.
It can mean so many things. How about other prophecies from fiction? Anybody reads fiction, maybe, where there's some prophecies in it too?
From Harry Potter, multiple times.
Harry Potter, multiple times.
I've been reading the Gregor series, and there's a bunch of prophecies in that. And there's also prophecies in Percy Jackson.
Junie B. Jones?
Junie B. Jones. I was not aware. Junie B. Jones has prophecies. Any others you want to talk about?
The Throne of Glass has three major prophecies.
Prophecies are in a lot of fiction stories, especially the kind of fiction stories I bet you all like to read. Is there one more over here you want to? Here, I'll catch it.
Star Wars. Oh,
Star Wars. All right, excellent. All right, so here's another question for you. Where do these prophecies come from? Like who, where does this information and this knowledge, like where was it? How did it get to people? I mean, where does the oracle get her information?
Okay, so in Greek times, the god Apollo, he had the oracle in his power, so he produced the prophecies through the oracle so everyone could hear them. But to make sure all the other gods were happy so the mortals didn't know as much, he always put them in riddles.
Anybody else want to tell me something about where this information comes from?
Some people say it comes from God. Also in Greek times before Apollo came, there was this Titan I forget the name of. She always did things on the good side. Let's say you were about to die tomorrow, and she said that you won't have to worry about your math test next week.
That would... exact words from a book. Okay. So one of the things we'll be, the adults will be talking about once you all leave, is thinking about prophecy for Unitarian Universalists. And not all of us believe in a god who's going to tell us something or the gods who are going to tell the oracle something, and that's not so much part of at least some of our belief systems now, right? But Unitarian Universalists still talk about prophecy in a different way. Sometimes they talk about people being prophets and telling truth and telling people things that they need to hear, seeing what's going to happen, and letting people know. So I have a question for y'all now, and this is actually really serious. All this was serious, but this is a serious one. I want you to think and talk amongst yourselves really quickly. I want some ideas here about what you all, as kids, think they all, adults out there, need to know. What do they need to know that maybe they don't know? What do they need to hear? Here, talk really quickly here for a second. I'm going to move this mic because I don't want them to hear yet.
What do they need to know? What do they need to know? important. Some of you have some information. Something that's really important?
Okay, we're back. So here, I've got a question for you all now. If this that we were just talking about is something the adults need to know, how are they going to find out? I could assign one of you to go out and speak the truth. Would it be better if you all did it together? Okay, it's a little more embarrassing if one of you does it. Is it a little less embarrassing if everybody does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, all right, Nick's got responsibility for this. Okay, so here's what I'm going to ask. I want you all, we're going to hold off on singing you out for a moment, because the first thing I want you to do is to go out into the adult world out there and tell them these prophetic truths, all right? And you may yell them loudly. You may whisper them quietly. Well, maybe not yell too loudly, okay? Let's hold off on inside voices, okay? So you may speak them out loud, you may whisper them to an adult, however you want. Go out, speak these truths to the world. Kids deserve respect. Go tell them if you want. Kids deserve respect. Go tell them.
Somebody tell me. I want to know.
Prophetic witness.
I want to know. Go tell them.
Prophetic witness is hard and chaotic, and it takes community.
I'm reading from the Christian scriptures, the first letter to the Corinthians. So pursue the way of love, but earnestly desire spiritual gifts as well, especially the gift of prophecy. Those who speak in tongues do not speak to us, but to God, for no one understands them when they talk in the Spirit about mysterious things. On the other hand, those who prophesy do talk to us, and they do so for our edification, encouragement, and comfort. Those who speak in tongues benefit only themselves, but those who prophesy benefit all the church. While I would like all of you to speak in tongues, I would much rather that you prophesy, because those who prophesy are more important than those who speak in tongues, unless they also interpret, in which case the church benefits too.
The vision of this fellowship calls us to reach to the wider community and to work for good. Each month we give the offertory to a local organization who we think is doing good in the community. This month we're going to be collecting for UFM Project Excel, I believe. To tell us about this will be Linda Tiener. She will come up, and then we will have our offertory. And let me just make a reminder that all money collected that is not designated specifically for UUFM will go to UFM.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here and visit with you today. Before I talk about Project Excel, I know many of you are familiar with UFM, and I wanted to share with you a project we've been working on for over a year, and that is upgrading our catalog so it's easier to read, more interesting to read. We also have a new logo and a new word mark to go along with that to try to freshen ourselves up and be more modern, as it were. We're very excited and pleased about it. I left a few catalogs in the back. I didn't have very many today, but I will leave what I have there, and you can certainly pick them up anywhere in town. UFM Community Learning Center is a community education and outreach program that is 49 years old now. One of the projects that we took on 6 years ago was Project Excel. It's a program for special needs adults that provides some educational enrichment and social opportunities for adults who have very little options to do that once they get out of regular school. The program serves special needs adults 18 and over from a whole regional area. We assumed that was going to be pretty local, but we have students that come as far as Greenleaf, which is over an hour's drive on a Saturday morning, to participate in our classes. This year we have 64 students enrolled in Project Excel. The way it works is we offer educational programming in a variety of ways. It might be more traditional classes like reading or math. It might be geography. It might be taking care of pets. We've had great success with theater and dance activities. Last semester we did an hour of yoga and an hour of dance that they very much enjoy. We've done tailgating games. We've done get to know your neighborhood, just a variety of classes to keep them stimulated, to give them some enrichment education, and to allow them to interact in an educational framework. The classes are offered at K-State in the Union, which gives them a K-State-like experience, as close as some of them may ever get to taking a college course. They also get special ID cards that's made by K-State for them so that they can participate and feel like they're really a K-State student. We work 5 weeks in one course, and then we do another 5 weeks. So we meet a total of 20 weeks during the school year. And they come, as I said, an hour and a half drive on a Saturday morning. Classes meet from 9 to 11:30 in the Union on Saturdays. We'll be starting again on the 28th of this month, and we'll be working straight through until May. The last session in May, we do a graduation ceremony so they can celebrate what they've accomplished this year. They all get certificates. They get an opportunity to share what they've learned with others that attend the service. And then at the end, we have cookies and punch, and generally Willie is there to congratulate them and participate in the joy of the graduation program. The thing that I like the best about Project Excel is how eager these students are to participate and learn. They come because they want to come on Saturday morning, leaving 7:30 in the morning to arrive in time. They are eager to see you. They're eager to go to class and learn anything. We even have one class when we can't find a teacher who can consistently teach a class for 5 weeks in a row. We have what we call a mystery class, which is generally the most popular of all. And that means that maybe I will teach a week on something, maybe you will teach a week on something, and maybe somebody else will teach a week on a topic. So there's a lot of variety that goes on in the class. But it's so rewarding to see the eagerness and excitement that our students have with coming on Saturday mornings to participate. And as I said, we have 64 students registered to participate during the school year. We recruit instructors from the campus and the community. You don't necessarily have to have a degree in special education to teach. We have used a number of students. We've used students that are in special education, but we also have had several students from the theater and dance program who have taught courses for us with great success, both dance themselves as well as expression and coping with feelings and doing a variety of things that they really, the students love. And I think it's a good reward for the K-State students that participate as well to learn something about a population that you don't encounter on a daily basis. We use volunteers as well to help us in the classroom to get students where they need to go, to participate in the class, to be an aid to the teacher, and also sometimes to be assigned to a specific student who needs a little extra watching over. We have some students that will get up and wander, and we don't like them to just wander because you don't know where they're going or whether they'll come back. So we generally have somebody who goes along to make sure that they know where they are and what they're doing. So that's a nutshell what Project Excel is all about. It's a very cool program. It's something that we are very proud to be offering to the community as an outreach service. UFM itself receives no money from this at all. We donate our services for managing the program, for grant writing, and for managing the funds that come in. The program is funded totally by donations and grants that we write. The students do contribute $25 each to participate in the program, so they have some financial investment as well in the program, but we provide funding for all the rest of the activities. So I appreciate the donations that you'll give us today. You've often been very generous with our program, and I thank you very much. Can I ask if there are any questions? No. Fine. Okay. Never mind. Nice to see you. I'll be around after the service if you've got questions for me.
Prophecy, a prediction, a divinely inspired utterance or revelation, or the action, function, or faculty of a prophet. Dictionary.com. Prophecy, a process in which one or more messages are allegedly communicated to a prophet by a god or spirit and often are then communicated to other people. Wikipedia. Prophecy, foreknowledge of future events, may sometimes apply to past events of which there is no memory and to present hidden things which cannot be known by the natural light of reason. Catholic Encyclopedia. Prophecy, an emanation sent forth by divine being through the medium of the active intellect. Rabbi Maimonides, 12th century Torah scholar, physician, astronomer. Do any of these traditional definitions of prophecy resonate with you? Is prophecy a concept foreign to UUs? What do some prominent contemporary UU sources have to say about prophets, prophetic religions, and prophecy? Prophets, brave and bold people who are willing to see what is happening, to say what is happening, and to act in accordance with what they know. UU Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker. Prophetic religion, a religion in which we intervene in human history for the sake of social justice. UU Reverend Kelly Dignan. Prophetic message, for us, not so much repent, but wake up. UU Soul Matters curriculum. The prophet hears and responds to an insistent and urgent inner voice. The prophet speaks from an internal fountain, giving voice to another's silence. The prophet sees and expresses in uncommon ways, upsetting the status quo. The prophet sends the wake-up call in the present to shape the future. UU Reverend Louise Green.
Next hymn of the morning is hymn number 106, Who Would True Value See? Please stand as you're willing and able and join.
A brave and startling truth. We, this people, on a small and lonely planet, traveling through casual space, past aloof stars, across the way of indifferent suns, to a destination where all signs tell us it is possible and imperative that we learn a brave and startling truth.
And when we come to it, to the day of peacemaking, when we release our fingers from fists of hostility and allow the pure air to cool our palms,
when we come to it, when the curtain falls on the menstrual show of hate, the faces, sooted with scorn, are scrubbed clean, when battlefields and Colosseum no longer rake our unique and particular sons and daughters up with the bruised and bloody grass to lie in identical plots in foreign soil. When the rapacious storming of the churches, the screaming racket in the temples have ceased, when the pennants are waving gaily, when the banners of the world tremble stoutly in the good, clean breeze.
When we come to it, when we let the rifles fall from our shoulders and children dress their dolls in flags of truce, when landmines of death have been removed and the aged can walk into evenings of peace, when religious ritual is not perfumed by the incense of burning flesh, and childhood dreams are not kicked awake by nightmares of abuse.
When we come to it, then we will confess that not the pyramids with their stones set in mysterious perfection, nor the gardens of Babylon hanging as eternal beauty in our collective memory, nor the Grand Canyon kindled into delicious color by western sunsets, nor the Danube flowing its blue soul into Europe, not the sacred peak of Mount Fuji stretching to the rising sun, neither Father Amazon nor Mother Mississippi, who, without favor, nurture all creatures in the depths and on the shores. These are not the only wonders of the world.
When we come to it, we, this people, on this minuscule and kithless globe, who reach daily for the bomb, the blade, and the dagger, yet who petition in the dark for tokens of peace. We, this people of on this mote of matter, in whose mouths abide cankerous words which challenge our very existence. Yet, out of these same mouths come songs of such exquisite sweetness that the heart falters in its labor and the body is quieted into awe.
We, this people, on this small and drifting planet, whose hands can strike with such abandon that in a twinkling life is sapped from the living, yet those same hands can touch with such healing, irresistible tenderness that the haughty neck is happy to bow and the proud back is glad to bend. Out of such chaos, of such contradictions, we learn that we are neither devils nor divines.
When we come to it, we, this people, on this wayward floating body, created on this earth, of this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man and every woman can live freely without sanctimonious piety, without crippling fear.
When we come to it, we must confess that we are the possible, we are the miraculous, the true wonder of this world, that is when and only when we come to it.
As Scott and Sylvia suggested earlier, prophecy is one of those words that's heavily weighted for lots of us. It conjures images of the scraggly bearded men calling out, "Repent, for the end of the world is at hand." Perhaps that image dates back to John the Baptist, known for his diet of locusts and honey, and his wardrobe of rough camel's hair. A wilderness dweller, he predicted the coming of a Messiah, and like so many prophets before and since, he ended up beheaded by the powers that be. Our image of the prophet as at least a little bit crazed predates Christianity. In Greek myth, Cassandra, the fourth daughter of King Priam of Troy, received the gift of prophecy from the god Apollo, but when she rejected his romantic overtures, he spit into her mouth to curse her so that her prophecies would not be believed. So when she said that her brother Paris's abduction of Helen would lead to war with Greece, no one believed her. They welcomed Helen with open arms while Cassandra flailed about and attacked Helen physically. When Cassandra issued a warning about the Trojan horse, no one believed her. So it came in, and she ended up being raped by Ajax the Lesser, one of the Greeks hidden in the horse. When she predicted that Troy would fall, no one believed her. People, including her own family, thought her insane because of the trances she went into when a prophecy came along and for the passion and occasional violence with which she demanded that people listen to her warnings. In time, say the stories, she was driven mad because her accurate prophecies were dismissed over and over. Now, in contrast to Cassandra, who no one believed, we have Jonah, the most successful prophet of all time. You no doubt remember Jonah as the minor Hebrew prophet who was consumed by a whale, or in more accurate translation, a big fish. Okay, a really big fish. What you may not remember is that after he resisted and resisted God's call for him to go to Nineveh and tell the people to repent or be destroyed, after he ran in the opposite direction and was swallowed and then vomited up by the fish, he relented and reluctantly went to Nineveh and told them they would be destroyed if they didn't repent. And they did, just like that. The book of Jonah is satire. Everything in it is exaggerated for effect, from the big fish to the days he spends walking across the city to his incredible success in converting the Ninevites from their evil ways in less than a month. Not only do the people fast and put on sackcloth and ashes, but so do the animals. But does Jonah breathe a sigh of relief that Nineveh has been saved and escapes destruction because of their repentance? No, he sulks. He complains to God that he knew from the beginning that God would be merciful and save Nineveh instead of destroy them the way he had predicted. The most successful prophet of the Hebrew Bible regrets he ever uttered prophecy because God reneged on his promised destruction. Those two examples of prophets do not inspire us to follow their path. People are either going to believe a prophet or not, and neither result feels good based on the stories. Either way, people are not going to acclaim you for your foresight. They may ignore you. They may quibble and bargain. Even if they accept what you say, they're not going to give you credit for saying it. They're going to drive you crazy. Or they'll just crucify you, literally. Cassandra was killed, though not directly for her prophecy. And other prophets, from Jesus to Martin Luther King, have indeed been killed for what they say. This is not a concern easily dismissed. As reggae artist Bob Marley asked, "How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look?" Oklahoma folk musician Woody Guthrie wrote a song about Jesus' death where he blames the bankers, preachers, cops, soldiers, and landlords for the crucifixion. And then he says, "This song was made in New York City of rich men and preachers and slaves. If Jesus was to preach like he preached in Galilee, they would lay Jesus Christ in his grave." In other words, those in power never want to hear prophetic words. And often those in power can keep others from hearing them and can even convince them that the prophet's not speaking in their best interest. So prophecy is a daunting task. So what is it that prophets bring us? Now, like Cassandra, many prophets predict destruction. In the Hebrew Bible, it's often destruction of Jerusalem, an event that occurred with some regularity to Middle Eastern cities as various empires swept through and invaded. Usually, though, that destruction was conditional, at least from the prophets. If we keep on the way things are going, if we continue on our current course, if we insist on doing things the same way, then there will be destruction. A prophet today sees the trends that are leading toward a future that most people cannot yet see. The signs may be written on the subway walls and tenement halls, as Simon and Garfunkel said. Prophets may even see what has happened in the past and how the past comes around again to greet us. They are condemned not so much for what they see coming and what they see right now as because others cannot see the same thing. Often there's good reason to deny what prophets have to say, because if we listen to them, we'll have to change. Take the climate change prophets, for example. They would have us give up gas engines, bankrupt energy companies, change our patterns of meat consumption, spend more money to fund carbon taxes, change our light bulbs, and quit flying. Yes, there are changes we can make as a society that will have the greatest effects, but let's face it, if we take climate change seriously, everybody's going to be inconvenienced. Yet in this case, at least, that inconvenience is preferable to the alternative. Prophets call people to account and demand change. And for the most part, people don't like that. On a more optimistic note, prophets proclaim possibilities. Hebrew Scriptures scholar Walter Brueggemann has written, "The task of prophetic ministry is to nurture, nourish, and evoke a consciousness and perception alternative to the consciousness and perception of the dominant culture around us." So to come to a consciousness that is unlike the consciousness of the dominant culture. So the prophet sees something that others don't and imagines a future that others can't imagine. Most people don't have a lot of imagination. Prophets do. Often the people who do that best in a society are its artists. They have imagination that connects the dots between the world as it is and the world as it should be. They ask why and why not. We heard from Maya Angelou earlier in our service, and I've already quoted Bob Marley and Woody Guthrie, a few other quick examples of artists pointing out the bad. Before World War I, Vasily Kandinsky painted about the coming disaster. Half a century later, pop artist Andy Warhol emerged, who the art critic Richard Dormant called a Jeremiah, whose pictures reflect the decadence of contemporary society and warnings of its consequences. In 1949, George Orwell's 1984 predicted a world radically divided between the rulers and the ruled, where all are supervised continually for their loyalty and facts no longer matter. A vision all too believable now. Kurt Vonnegut told us in 1973 in Breakfast of Champions how bad an idea it was to run automobiles on fossil fuel. And then there are those artists who show us how the world could be better. John Lennon's song, Imagine, challenges boundaries and borders more completely than anything else I've seen, if you really think about those words. Chinese artist Ai Weiwei's sculpture, Fragments, uses ironwood from ancient Chinese temples to produce a work that's seen differently from different perspectives, chaotic on the same level, but shaping a map of China from above, a potential future built from the artifacts of the past. Ai says of one of his great inspirations, Vincent van Gogh, "The art was a belief that expressed his views of the universe, how it should be." Artists then can depict a future of how it should be or how it might be. Kandinsky, in his book Concerning the Spiritual in Art, discusses how the artist inhabits a tip of a pyramid that moves into the future. And when the artist is there, it's only a point. But as more people realize the truth, the pyramid expands into its fullness. So I've been talking here about prophets in the singular as individuals. And often we see them as lonely, isolated figures whose words and sometimes whose very person are rejected by their communities. So what does it mean to be a community of prophecy? It seems to contradict our most closely held ideas about prophecy. And while there's truth to the soul prophet crying in the wilderness, most prophets rise out of particular communities and particular contexts and times with particular messages. The major test of the prophet's success is not the individual prophet, but the community's reaction to them. So a community of prophecy is not necessarily full of prophets. I'd hate to imagine the chaos that might invite. Jane read this morning from 1 Corinthians, which is one of the letters of Paul. I think of Paul as the church consultant of his day, running around advising congregations how they could be healthy and effective. And that whole section of 1 Corinthians that talks about the variety of spiritual gifts, how different people can have different talents and skills, and all of them need to be acknowledged and valued. And in the portion Jane read, Paul talks particularly about the value of prophecy to a community, how prophecy builds up the church. If there are people who can look forward and see what might happen or what kind of future we might create together, that's the kind of prophecy that can build up the church. And earlier I talked about the challenge of being a prophet, that people will not listen, that they'll criticize, that if they embrace what you say, they'll probably change it beyond recognition, and, oh, they might kill you. The greatest protection from the downsides of prophecy is to be part of a community of prophecy. So a community of prophecy will value and listen to its prophets. It will try to understand what they have to say and be part of that, the first part of the widening of that pyramid that Kandinsky talks about. Above all, a community of prophecy will help to make sure that prophets don't get killed. They'll listen hard and try to discern the truth. And when there's truth, they'll pay attention and do something to make a difference, or at least not stand in the way. Now, most of all, a community of prophecy will not be afraid of calling to account on moral grounds. I recently read a Facebook post on someone's page, I've forgotten whose, expressing reservation about the Kansas People's Agenda's use of moral language. Why, they wondered, couldn't we just stick to the political language? And I suspect that some members of the fellowship might feel the same, concerned that moral and religious language may alienate people more than embrace them. Kansas People's Agenda, though, is taking its cues from a Disciples of Christ minister, William Barber, who has organized Moral Mondays in North Carolina, a movement that is unashamedly saying that religion has been misrepresented in the public square and that many religious people are far from conservative. I quote Barber here. A moral movement claims higher ground in partisan debate by returning public discourse to our deepest moral and constitutional values. We cannot allow so-called conservatives to hijack the powerful language of faith. Neither can we let so-called liberals pretend that moral convictions are not at play in public policy debates. Every budget is a moral document, or it is an immoral one. Did I hear an amen? Oh, my goodness. So our purpose is as a religious community, and in that sense, we're seeking and promoting prophetic messages rather than political ones. As a religious community, we don't make political endorsements of candidates and parties. Why? The quick and dirty answer is that it threatens our tax-exempt status. But there is something more powerful that it threatens, which is our identity as a religious community. We want to be able to hold everybody to account, whoever they are, whoever our politicians are. We want to be able to hold everyone to account. And unlike candidates and parties, we are not about political strategies and tactics. That's not our corner of the world. And I've been involved in politics enough to know the angling and alliances that politics require. In politics, compromise is messy and morality is often obscure. While tactics and strategy cannot be ignored by religious communities acting in the public square, we don't want to be obsessed by them either. Because as a religious community, we are not as tied to specific outcomes as a political group is. And I'm not naive enough to believe that the strategies are completely avoidable. We will be involved in some of those conversations. But sometimes, as religious communities, as religious people, we may need to do things that may not be the most strategic or that may not look like the most strategic. I remember a time some years back as I once more futilely rose concerns about BGLTQ rights. And I was just thinking, why am I doing this so many times, so uselessly? And my answer was just because it has to be said. And today, we're doing better on that issue than I had expected we would ever do in my lifetime. Because we kept at it, and we kept saying it, even when it was not the strategic thing to do. And as Hebrew Scriptures scripture scholar Walter Brueggemann reminds us, prophetic voice is not about issues as much as finding a new sense of what is possible. He writes this in The Prophetic Imagination. The prophet engages in futuring fantasy. The prophet does not ask if the vision can be implemented. For questions of implementation are of no consequence unless the vision can be imagined. The imagination must come before the implementation. Our culture is competent to implement almost anything and to imagine almost nothing. The same royal consciousness that makes it possible to implement anything and everything is the one that shrinks imagination, because imagination is a danger. Thus, every totalitarian regime is frightened of the artist. It is the vocation of the prophet to keep alive the ministry of imagination, to keep on conjuring and proposing futures alternative to the single one the king wants to urge as the only thinkable one. So I can't help but notice that he mentioned art as significant in that, as I alluded to earlier. Sometimes even when we can't see how it's going to come out right in the end, we just have to say things. We have a responsibility to say things. So like the unpopular prophet or artist, we say, hey, this is wrong. Stop it, or bad things are bound to happen. And that's prophecy. A political group focuses on what can be achieved, the art of the possible. We are focused on bigger issues of values and principles, the broader questions of how we want to live in the world and what we want the world to be like. And part of our obligation as a religious community, as a prophetic community, is to notice and name right and wrong. And we're at a place in history where those qualities are shining in bolder relief. We're called as religious people to weigh in on the side of the vulnerable and to name persecution of others as wrong, whether on account of their religion, their race, their gender identity, their sexual orientation, their ethnic background, wrong, not only inadvisable or unfair or even unconstitutional, just plain wrong, moral terms. We are called as a community of prophecy to dream a new world into being. Progressive Christian theologian Walter Wink has this to say: history belongs to the intercessors who believe the future into being. This is not simply a religious statement. It is also true of communists or capitalists or anarchists. The future belongs to whoever can envision a new and desirable possibility, which faith then fixes upon as inevitable. This is the politics of hope. Hope envisages its future and then acts as if the future is now irresistible, thus helping to create the reality for which it longs. The future is not closed. There are fields of forces whose actions are somewhat predictable, but how they will interact is not. Even a small number of people firmly committed to the new inevitability on which they have fixed their imaginations can decisively affect the shape the future takes. So says Walter Wink. Now, clearly, this is not only visioning and dreaming and praying for an alternative future, but actually living into that future and working for that future. And that's why events like the Kansas People's Agenda rally coming up on Wednesday matter. The vision is to create a state of Kansas that supports and encourages rather than discourages voting rights. That all Kansas children have adequate public education. That people of all races receive even-handed treatment from the criminal justice system. That environmental sustainability is included as a value in legislation, that all Kansans have access to good health care, that people have priority over guns, that sexual orientation and gender identity do not offer excuses to discriminate. And part of the intermediate vision to attaining that is creation of a coalition of people who are prepared to push our government in direction of that vision. And that does require doing something. And that's why I'm attending the rally on Wednesday. And I know not everyone can, work, family responsibilities, so forth. But long ago, I decided that when I could stand up and be counted, I would try to do so. And doing it in community, rather than as an isolated individual, an isolated prophet, helps to protect us from both the cynicism of Jonah and the tragedy of Cassandra. And that's what a prophetic community means. At least we don't have to feel crazy all by ourselves. We may be out of step with the wider world, but somebody's got our back. And when we can't see the imagined beautiful future before us, someone reminds us. And when we forget how crucial our voice is in avoiding the horrors that could come, someone reminds us. That's what it is to be in prophetic community. UU minister Suzelle Lynch summarizes the prophetic community this way: prophets call us to recognize the lack of justice and compassion in our society. The prophet says, pay attention. Prophets invite us to help heal human hurt and misery. The prophet says, give generously, be kind, and help others. Prophets urge us to address the injustices that cause misery. The prophet says, reach out, listen to those who are oppressed, organize for change. Who are those prophets? We are. We are a prophetic community, naming what is wrong, standing up for what is right, and working to create justice, peace, and compassion in all the ways we can. Or, as we heard from Maya Angelou earlier, when we come to it, we, this people, on this wayward floating body created on this earth, of this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man and every woman can live freely, without sanctimonious piety, without crippling fear. When we come to it, we must confess that we are the possible. We are the miraculous, the true wonder of this world. That is when
and only when we come to it. So may it be. Our closing hymn is number 287, Faith of the Larger Liberty. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. And from 1 Corinthians again, keep alert, stand firm in your faith, be courageous, be strong. Let all that you do be done in love. So may it be.